I've always had this hobbyist interest and knowledge of programming, but as I've been really specific about my intent to learn how to build my own AI models, I always look for like content creators that will both entertain me and educate me, and the Primogen has been such a fantastic resource for learning coding, learning how to involve the ins and outs, the behind the scenes, how the sausage is made, and there's been very little cross of maybe something I'm a more of a subject matter expert in, but there was a clip on a recent stream that I want to share and I want to talk about because he's both right and kind of right. So
important advice I will ever tell you, never, ever, for any reason, look at patents if you are a software engineer. If you are even known to look at patents, if you even have history of looking at patents and you happen by accident to even see the title or any mentioned detail of any competitor on software engineering design patents, and your company is doing that, they actually have the right to sue you for patent infringement. It's like real talk. As a software engineer, never, ever, for any reason ever, open up patents. Ever. It is incredibly dangerous. It is wild that that can even happen. But people will, and they do, and companies are pieces of crap sometimes. Also, software patents are insane.
Yes, just that's 100% right. Okay, so there's a lot to break down here. When you're setting just kind of like a line in the sand, and I do want to preface that I am not a practicing patent lawyer or a lawyer in general anymore. I've gone a different path. And nothing I'm saying is legal advice, but this is more just to be educational in the aspects of patent law and especially for developers and people that are just interested in creating. Because patent infringement, copyright infringement is pretty scary. And it's something that some people think too much about or not enough about. So what he's talking about, you know, that line in the sand, I guess from a corporate aspect, because if you don't know who the Primogen is, he was a FAANG engineer. Specifically, he worked for Netflix. So just to, you know, put a broad rule in place, there's no gray areas. This is very simple. Just don't look at patents. Well, the problem with that is that willful blindness, meaning that you're just going to avoid and just, you know, I'm just not going to look at things, is not a valid defense. It reminds me of the Dave Chappelle stand-up where he's talking about his white friend, and he gets pulled over and he's like, "Sorry, officer, I didn't know I couldn't do that." And he's like, oh, sorry, you know, just be on your way. That's not what happens. If you infringe on a patent, the person that is damaged gets to collect damages. And the damages are generally assessed by understanding what loss of profits did the person who is harmed would have otherwise get by your infringement. Now, as far as the exposure, that is kind of an interesting one because there is an avenue for an X multiple of collection, but it's not generally, you know, just a flat out thing. So I pulled this article from this attorney, Morris Manning and Martin, and it's just a great quick reference. So right here, once you've learned the existence of a patent, what are your duties? There is no legal duty to investigate whether a competitor has patents. In fact, some lawyers suggest that it may be better not to search for competitors' patents because of the possible problems that can occur once you learn of the existence of a problematic patent. So that's what they're saying. Like, Netflix attorneys are just, you know, putting a line in the sand, just saying, hey, just don't look at them. Because now we're just going to run into a whole bunch of avenues of issues. And one thing that is generally not mentioned is reading a patent. I mean, I have a book called Faber's Mechanics on Patent Drafting. And if you've ever read a patent, and we can pull one up and I'll show you an example, that they're just so oddly written. So I've had people try to read the patent, read through it, not understand the elements of a patent and not fully understand what is actually protected. So, you know, that just gets kind of hazy as far as, you know, what route should you go down. So That's just another reason. Just, you know, just refer to someone who's an expert and, you know, a patent agent or a patent attorney, and just let them interpret it for you. So the paper goes on and says, however, once you have knowledge of patents that you might infringe, legal duties arise. Harm in general, when you are, again, not legal advice, just educating. In general, in the law, you always have a duty to mitigate. So once you know there's some harm, to, even outside of patent law, that could arise, you have a duty to make sure that you yourself do not get harmed or cause harm. That's the duty to mitigate. Going on, this knowledge may also make you liable for increased damages if you're found to be infringing patents. The patent law authorizes a court to increase the damages in patent infringement lawsuits up to 3 times. That's treble damages, the amount found or assessed. This is known as treble damages award. A decision to increase damages is discretionary with the court, but it is usually exercised only in cases of willful and wanton infringement or bad faith litigation. So, I mean, not only did you have exposure, but there's this idea of mens rea, the intent behind your actions. Like, I'm just going to infringe on this. I know I'm doing wrong. And that's going to give the court the ability to assess as much as the 3x lost profits or however other damages are assessed. So that's basically what the Primogen is saying in this clip, is that if a coder just goes and starts reading patents, doesn't tell anyone, for example, moves on with their life, that they're going to, you know, cause a lot of harm to a company like Netflix. And another thing, especially when you're working for a major company, when there's dollar signs a lot of times that are just like flashing in a person that's going to file a lawsuit or an infringement suit. And they always go after the deepest pockets. So there could be multiple parties involved, multiple companies involved. But if you're working for the big guy with the deepest pockets, they're coming after you. That's just generally how these things happen. Now, one thing that I do want to share is that when I was working at a patent firm, we would do these massive reports called state-of-the-art research reports. And a company, whether it was software engineers or mechanical engineers or biomedical, what have you, anybody within the research and development area would pay an extraordinary amount for what was called these state-of-the-art research reports. And I would spend 40, as much as 80, 120 hours just scouring the internet, published articles, patents, and finding just kind of what the breadth of whatever specific technology they're going after. So for example, if it was like an articulating hip joint, I would be searching and scouring the internet. What is everything that is patented that I can find, whether here in the US or globally, or published, because medicine, a lot of people will just publish them, academics, and not patent them, and just fine, because a patent has to be new, has to be novel, and you even if it's not patented, you can still run into trouble and be stopped from obtaining a patent if it was otherwise published elsewhere. And so these reports were just so extraordinarily difficult to research and put together. And then companies would take that, understand, okay, this is kind of the parameters I have to operate around in order to ensure I'm not infringing. The purpose is because if you go down investing a lot of dollars, so if in this example, the software developers for Netflix are starting to just go down the path of trying to develop something in the company, because developers are incredibly expensive, and so is all the ancillary resources that are needed to drive these things. And you find out down the road, you know, months, years, that you're infringing, that's going to be a massive problem for you. So in that sense, state-of-the-art research would help you mitigate your own, you know, costs, which is important for a business. So that is something. Now, in the software developer realm, software patents are, I love, this is just the general consensus, and I found this random article. Why software patents are evil. They're hard. They're tough. You know, they're methods. They're called method patents. So it's breaking down kind of just like, oh, what steps is the software taking? And actually, let's jump in here and let's show you. So I'm in the USPTO government search website in the advanced search, and you're just going to see a lot of weird Boolean things. So we'll go in here. I'm going to search. Let's see. Fix this window so you can see it. Let's see here. Okay. We are going to search something I was actually looking up before. So I was looking for sentiment, and I want to find emotion, and I want to find artificial. Basically, what I was looking for, I was trying to see what the current patented technology is around sentiment analysis. So, and then I'm going to look up in the background summary of it, and it's going to pull up all the patents that uncover that. So we'll just look for a good one here. Vonage Business Limited. Pretty sure. Okay, here's a multi-tier rule in AI processing for high-speed conversation scoring. This one's by Bank of America. I always like to flip over here, and I'll move this, and we're going to find the claims of the patent. So you have an abstract, you have a background summary. Abstract's going to tell you kind of a quick overview. Whoops, that was the wrong one. Okay, and we're going to jump down. So you have to have drawings, you have to have a background summary, which is what I searched in my advanced search function, and background summary is going to tell you, okay, why, you know, what's the issue with the current state of technology, another reason why you do state-of-the-art research, and then how you go about correcting the current issues with the technology and the importance of the patent. So the patent examiner in DC can read this and understand just the full breadth of, you know, what's the problem, what's this solving, because the patent also needs to be useful other than just new. It's a long one. Okay, so here we go. Here's the claims, and of course, it's going to be a method. Can I increase this? Yeah. Okay, this, a method for providing pre-processing of an utterance prior to feeding utterance-related data to a sequential neural network classifier for conversation sentiment scoring. The utterance being expressed by a user to... Yeah, why can't they just, you know, utterance? Can't they just say someone talking... to an interactive response system during an interaction between the user and the interactive response system, the method comprising, I'm not going to go into all of this. This is a large independent claim. So there's always independent claims. So that by itself is the patented technology, but then there's also dependent claims that attach when you're the kind of the art of drafting a patent is to make it as broad as possible to protect the whole breadth of the applicability of the technology, but also as narrow as possible as to not potentially be too expansive and infringes on or is not patentable as new on existing patents or technology. But it's saying that there's a conversation manager, there's a natural language processor, a signal extractor processing, yada, yada, yada. So I'm sure within the world of sentiment analysis, there may be similar. Now, this is published. If you go and you see kind of here, these long twos, these are in the, with the A, these are applications. But if they actually have an issued number, this is actually fully issued, patented, and published technology. But it just, it's narrow, I'm sure, but it's also broad. Now, can someone else develop something under the hood that does something similar? That is kind of why, you know, the whole case of this article about, you know, patents being evil is that they're so broad. No one can fully determine what's in them. And it's just a whole mess around it. And a lot of it is also, I mean, first of all, software code itself is copyright protected. It's something that is written just like you would pick up a book. So there is protection in that realm, but copyright only extends to the ability if you were just to straight up rip off, copy pasta, the exact code into yours, and then somehow they find it and they can sue you. That is just so hard to monitor for these developers. So, you know, patents, that's why people try to protect the method. One thing I do enjoy about Elon is that, like, everything's open source. Just put it out there. Sometimes he does patent stuff to protect against people with bad actors. However, for the most part, you know, you're just kind of protected by your user interface, your customer experience. People want to use your product because they love your product rather than try to protect, you know, and stop the market in general of creating incredible things for users. So that was probably more than, you know, what's obviously under the hood when, you know, the Primogen's talking about why you shouldn't look at patents. But I just kind of want to share that. The last thing I will share, artificial intelligence is going to be interesting. Specifically, like when we look at like the EU Act, AI Act, which is the first, and it's a landmark act for globally about the protection of users and just the world in general from artificial intelligence that may just exceed the functionality that we want it to. Is this transparency requirement? And this is also something the United States is looking at. And I did a previous podcast episode video on IBM, on them developing proprietary trust technology. Does this AI do what it says it does? And it's all through transparency. Now, this talks about like the data sets and that were used for training, but also to what extent is transparency? Do you have to disclose the method of how the AI model is actually working? Because in that sense, that public disclosure is going to be an issue as related to patents, because now you're going to have a one for one and be like, hey, this transparency that you disclosed as required by the AI Act matches up exactly with what I myself patented. And I think that's going to be an issue. Everybody and their mother seems to be patenting AI technology. And they're so like minuscule. This does this with a tight different variation. I just don't want this to inhibit the ability to innovate, which, despite what people think, patents actually do. The ability for a creator and inventor to protect. There are bad actors, there are patent trolls. I don't know how you fix that. I think one aspect would be like trademarks. So for trademarks, you have to actually use it in commerce. And if you don't, you can lose your trademark. I think it'd be interesting if there was an ability to adapt that to patents where, hey, you can't just hold on to this patent. You have to at least take it to market in some sense, you know, and because people will patent stuff or they'll challenge patents and they just have no dog in the fight. And I absolutely hate that. So when it comes to AI, I just hope that there's not going to be an issue with this.